What's up, everybody? Welcome back. I am officially back in action, and I have a beard. We're here to talk to you about Joker. I'm not going to try the laugh. We'll see you guys in just a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
That is exactly the level it should always be at.
It hits. It hits, man. I am excited to be back. This is a big day.
This is a huge day because I don't know what to do with my hands anymore. It's been so long. We just took the longest break we've ever taken in 4 years.
Yeah, we did manage to get one. you wished you were in my chair so you could have done the laugh.
I'm just going
to
do it all the time.
You're doing the laugh like you hope that people are like, oh, Drew's just messing around. But you actually hope they go, that's a really good laugh.
I want someone
laugh.
To go like, wow.
That was a really good laugh.
Is Joaquin Phoenix here?
That's pretty good. It's better. All those voicemails you leave me where you just do the laugh.
I just have done that. I've been doing it from different phone numbers, but it's obvious it's me.
And I've been on so many painkillers, I just kept thinking I was imagining it.
You were. Yeah. It was.
So yes, we're here. We're back. We're in studio. We are doing an episode of Action Movie Anatomy. And this time we're talking about Todd Phillips' film, Joker. Joker is a huge movie, a crazy movie, an iconic movie at this point, I would almost say. It's probably the most polarizing movie to come out in the comic book genre in a long time. And we really didn't want to miss the chance to talk about it.
No, I mean, you know, we had to take a couple weeks off and we missed a couple movies. We, you know, I think originally we were supposed to do Zombieland 2 today, and last week we were supposed to do Gemini Man. But honestly, with all those movies that have come out, you saw Gemini Man.
I was able to see that, yeah.
We haven't heard a lot about Zombieland 2.
No, it opened, right?
I believe so. I think it's out.
It feels like it came and went. It was crazy how little we heard about it.
But this movie is going to be a movie that's talked about for a really long time, and especially a lot more this year. And as we get closer to Oscar season, it felt like it would be wrong if we didn't, because we actually were at the screener. We saw this before it was released, and we were so ready to go, and then you got hit by a train.
I got hit by an actual freight train. It's probably a good thing to let everybody know. I know I was in here in the middle of the whole craziness for one episode, but I still didn't really know at that point what the hell was going on, because obviously I thought I was good enough to come back to work already.
Yeah, and, it was like the eye of the storm.
Yeah, we went to tape a second show that day after we saw me 2-3 weeks ago, and I like physically almost fell over in a parking garage and like couldn't stand up to find my car. It was a disaster.
Almost laid down in a parking structure in Burbank. If you guys don't know and you've never been to L.A., laying down in a parking structure is almost the equivalent of dying.
Something that you do when you move here early on. You don't have somewhere to stay.
This is true. This is very true.
So anyway, long story short, I had some issues with my spine. I had a disc out of place. I had to get urgent surgery. Roxy has made fun of me because I kept saying emergency surgery.
Emergency surgery.
She was like, emergency surgery is like you go in for surgery that day.
Yeah,
it felt emergency to me.
There's a video online of a guy on the home shopping or the QVC.
Okay.
You know, and he's like showing how sturdy a samurai sword is.
Yeah.
And he hits it on the table and it snaps and stabs him. And then he falls down. He's like, oh. And then like some guy, like a camera guy comes in. He's like, I'm not sure what just happened. We're going to need emergency surgery in the studio. So whenever you say emergency surgery.
That's a pretty good video.
That's what I think.
That sounds amazing.
It's a good video.
So yes, I went in, got taken care of. I'm 11 days recovered. Lingering stuff, still getting over it, but I am well enough to obviously drive beyond my feet. And as I mentioned before, grow a beard.
I know, I'm trying to do the same thing. I do it every year around this time because I just gain weight, because I like to eat in the fall in the winter.
Got it. Thanks.
So I feel like I trick myself into thinking the beard helps. But I think I just look a little homeless and still chubbier. So.
Well, here's the thing about the beard deal, because I've done the same thing the last couple of years. Also, I feel the same way. You started out, it's itchy and it feels patchy. And then you're like, this is cool. People do this that look cool. And then you're like, I feel really sloppy. I need to get rid of this.
You like look at Chris Evans or like Ryan Gosling or like Bradley Cooper. And you're like, that's exactly what I look like.
Yeah,
and then you like walking down the street and you see your reflection, you're like, holy shit, who's this homeless guy?
Yeah,
it's,
right.
It's you.
And then you look and you're next to a dumpster and you're like, I'll just lay down here.
And I'm just gonna lay down here
in the parking lot in Burbank. So long story short though, it's all taken care of now. I am on the mend and obviously back here. I see some people in the chat here. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if Lucas Shashek is somebody who's been in an AMA chat before. Lucas Shashek is a friend of ours. He's my best friend in the whole
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Whole world,
him and John Rocha,
who we were lucky enough to meet through Alex, who's part of Action Industries and has become, you know, a big fan of Schmodown. Exciting to see his name in here, as well as a lot of other mainstays. I see Paul DeNuzio. We see,
yeah, and I mean, in every relationship, there's one smart person and one moron. And his wife, his beautiful, loving, kind, caring, considerate wife, intelligent, is Team Guy. This moron is Team Bateman.
Yeah, well,
so glad you're here, Luke.
He's a smart dude.
And by the way, everyone calls him Luke. If you're real friends with him, you call him Luke.
Yeah, well, he and I have a secret handshake.
Well,
so
I'm pretty sure you guys
have you ever seen the secret handshake?
Has he ever seen it?
Let's do the show.
Let's do the
show. We're
here
to talk about Joker.
We've gotten distracted.
So anyway, guys, we are back here to talk Joker. It's a movie that we were both very excited about when it was coming out. Joker was, we saw it the Tuesday of the week I had to go into the ER to figure out that I actually needed the surgery. And yep. it was the last of the screenings that I hobbled into with a golf club. I just couldn't miss it. I was going to be so disappointed if I didn't get to see this movie until like weeks after it was out.
And I just did not want to be seen with you with that golf club, but I had to assist you. I had to help you in, help you sit down.
I went to several screenings with the golf club.
You went to a lot of places with the golf club.
At least nine.
I counted. But yeah, so we saw this and it was one of those weird things where when we got done, what did you sneak out right away? Or you went out because your back was hurting, you went up and you used the restroom, and then I looked for you, I think. Is that this one?
Yeah, we were gonna do like first thoughts reviews.
Right.
Which,
yep,
by the way, guys, if you like our little first thoughts reviews that we do, we have a YouTube channel, Action Industry. It's a whole brand Drew and I own, and we do these quick reviews. There are first thoughts reviews up already for Terminator, which are amazing, by the way. And we are going to see that tonight. So
really?
We're going to be posting our first thoughts tonight as soon as we get out of the screen, about 9:30 Pacific Standard Time on the Action Industries YouTube. So check that out tonight. Get excited. But we were going to do our first thoughts on Joker, and we didn't get to.
Yeah.
We left separately. So I did mine really quickly that night. You did yours the next morning.
It's crazy how doing something 24 hours later,
I know,
it literally got half as many views as
it's
yours.
It's bizarre.
It really is crazy. I'm so glad that you got yours done. And now that we've had so much time to marinate on it, I mean, we got a lot of things to talk about on the show, so let's get into it. Let's do the first thing that we always do, and that's some Patreon shout-outs. We got to thank you guys so much for supporting us, helping us pay for Ben's back surgery. Patreon.com/TeamAction is where you can support us. There are a ton of movie trivia, Schmodown, behind-the-scenes reviews from Ben's singles run, and then when the team's tournament starts, I mean, we'll at least have two, right? Mm-hmm. As long as you and I can hopefully win that first
match each. We qualified for the first round.
Yes, exactly. check that out, patreon.com/TeamAction. The reason I'm talking about it is because we have two patrons we got to shout out today. That's Andy Merriweather and, of course, Albert. We're at Harma, who has been, I know, I just tried to roll through it.
That was really impressive.
Albert's been, he's awesome. He does a ton of movie reviews. He does a ton of Schmodown reviews. And he's honestly just like a really positive, like, light in the creative space.
He's also part of the Movie Trivia Face-Off League, which is a lot of the diehard Schmodown fans. They compete in a lot of these fan leagues, which is where Polyama, the current champion in singles, came up. Chance Ellison, who is one of the sort of top tier rookies this year.
Yep.
So is he a rookie this year or was it last year? Why does nobody talk about Chance as a rookie?
I think
this year?
He was a rookie last year. I think he came into the league last year officially.
I don't even remember.
Because he was on Corruption and Corruption was in the tournament.
Oh yeah, he didn't come in last year. Yeah. You're right. That's why. He was a rookie last year. So but anyway, Albert and Andy, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for your support. And as always, you know, we salute you. A couple quick shout outs before we get into all like the meat and potatoes of the show today. Go check us out on social media. You can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy. You can find the show at Team Action Show. Actually, go on Twitter right now to at Team Action Show. Retweet the most recent tweet and vote, because I want to talk about it a little bit on the show. It's just, what is the most defining characteristic or most important characteristic of the Joker? And we put makeup, the laugh, his costume.
Right.
And physicality.
Physicality.
Those are the four things that are that we think are four of the most important things behind the Joker. And last thing before we get in the show is a big shout out to Ryan Nielsen up in the booth.
Yeah. Big shout out.
Ryan. Aww,
thanks, guys. Yeah. That means a lot. I mean, we missed you so much. We're so happy to have you back and talking Joker.
And 10 second, 20 second, real quick, what'd you think of Joker?
I was really satisfied with it. I produced DC Movie News here. I love DC movies. I think this was a big move for them. Definitely a ballsy movie. However, I do think it took a little too much from the movies it was inspired by, which are Taxi Driver and King of Comedy.
Yep.
And I wish it was a tiny bit more original, but Joaquin Phoenix, man, performance of the year.
Yeah.
Wow, that was great.
Yeah, that was a great 20-second review. Ryan is obviously a talented host as well. So, Ryan, thank you for your thoughts there. Last couple quick shout-outs, and then we're going to get into the first segments of the show today. Be sure to check out all the various places if you want to follow Action Industries and what Drew and I are doing. Go check out Action Industries on Facebook. We have a Facebook page as well as some fan pages that have existed for a while, but there's lots of interaction up there, things to check out. And we mentioned Instagram, you know, at Team Action Show. Action Industries is the Instagram. There's like a question every single week. If you go and answer, we will read your question on the show. So we have the AMA question of the week we'll be doing later today that literally comes from the Instagram, so go check it out. All right, coming up today on the show, we are going to be talking about Fist Pump Moment. We're going to be talking about thesis statement, all the things we do on the show. You're also going to be answering a few questions, which is, which of the six, well, five actually, technical Jokers, has the best Joker makeup? Because you can't include Mark Hamill because he's a cartoon character.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, which DC villain deserves his own or her own spin-off film next? It doesn't have to be R-rated necessarily, but if DC saw as much financial success with this Joker film as they have, I think that's a really interesting question for us to answer. So we're going to be talking about those today. Let's get into the first segment on the show. We didn't do the rules.
I'm so bad
at my job.
No, I mean, it's been a while. I didn't know what to do with my hands for the first 2 minutes of the show.
It looks like you still don't know.
I don't.
Yeah. It's just sitting there.
It is just sitting here. Is it supposed to be doing something?
Is it looking at me? So we talk about movies on the show. Those movies adhere to four basic rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. So this is weird because he is the hero.
Yeah, I mean, he is technically the hero of the movie. And that's another thing that we're going to talk about is just about him and celebrating Arthur Fleck, and if we will or we won't, but I do believe by the end of the movie, I think he plays by his own rules.
Yeah, it definitely seems like he starts to establish that he wants to be doing his own thing, and I think that definitely constitutes his own rules. Remember, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, what have you, in the room. I mean, kind of, like, he's smart enough to get by, I guess,
and
get on the show.
Exactly. I think that he is able to keep it together enough and is smart enough to go on that show, to use the idea that he's getting made fun of and then taking advantage of it, and then obviously how the movie ends.
Yeah, three, the movie is driven by police, military, political, or mercenary figure. That's not true.
Yep, nope, that's a miss.
And getting back to rule two again, I mean, who is the villain? That's the question. Like, who is the villain a thing? Is the villain...
Is it society? Is it mental illness? Is it the Joker?
Yeah.
Is it Thomas Wayne?
The degradation of people's like goodwill towards others in the world that turns him into what he is. Like, right. I don't really know. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. There are like burning, exploding shit.
Yeah, at the end.
The riot. But like, I don't actually know if you see like a specific
like
a
bomb
grenade
go
or
off,
something.
But I'm pretty sure there's definitely the explosion there in the end with the riots.
Yeah, so definitely kind of a weird movie in terms of like usually the rules we play by on the show, but I think that will invite some pretty good conversation here. So let's get into thesis statement, which is the first thing we do on the show. Usually, apologies to anybody who's tuned in for a pure review that we had so much lead up to that. Obviously, being out for a while, we have to plug a lot of stuff and
catch up.
And shoot the shit. Thesis statement is your biggest, boldest thought about this film. So when the movie comes up, someone says, "Did you see Joker yet?" This is what you say. This is the thing when the movie comes up in 5 years and you're at a party and you're like, well, see, here's the thing 5 years later talking about this movie. This is why that movie mattered. And it's the best, the only, the first, the last, the greatest. We don't really like to say, you know, this is my favorite of the Joker makeups or something. It should usually be a little bit more hyperbolic. You want it to be really drastic. And I'm going to jump in first with mine because I thought this when I walked out of the theater. And now that I've sat on it for like 3 weeks, I still feel this. This is the best movie of 2019. Now, there are a few caveats here. There's a few of the really big movies that are coming out in the last quarter of the year that some critics have seen and I haven't yet. I've obviously been injured, so there's a few things recently that came out. Jojo Rabbit, some of our friends have seen screenings of. I've heard that's one of the best of the year. And there's a few others, obviously, that people have gotten to watch that I've heard incredible things about. I know a lot of people have seen Ford Ferrari already.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be really good. But as far as the films I've seen so far, and I thought pretty carefully about it, this is the best movie of the year. And the reason I feel that is because I think, and I agree with what Ryan says, I think that the source material that this movie is inspired by does create a lot of the tone and the vibe you get. It also, you know, it's inspired by the two probably most famous Batman comics, not including Year One, which is The Killing Joke and Dark Knight Returns. You have elements of both of those comics that are shown in this film. So if you combine those two comic books, but the two films he mentioned, 1976's Taxi Driver by Scorsese and 1982, The King of Comedy, also Scorsese. Yep. You kind of get this movie. That's kind of what you end up getting. And I think it's going to endure. I think it's going to be a movie that in 5 years, people are going to remember the impact of this movie and the risk that it took and the performance and the violence and sort of when it came out in a way that, like, Endgame will be remembered so differently. Like, Endgame is going to be remembered as part of this, like, decade thing that existed. This, yeah. Like, but it's not going to be remembered, like, necessarily more than Infinity War. It's not going to necessarily be remembered more than the entirety of the MCU. This movie just stands alone. There's no other movie in DC. There's no other movie that has been made that attempted to do what this movie did, and it absolutely did it. Like, it crushed it.
Yeah.
So I think, to me, that's why this is the best movie of the year. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. I think he'll probably win Best Actor, unless people just feel that it's too kind of offensive of a character.
Yeah, I think I truly do believe he should win Best Actor, and I would love to see a cinematography award, at least a nomination, because the way that he shoot this movie is beautiful. I don't think that Phillips deserves a Best Director. Now, I think he did a great job directing.
Yeah.
I really do, but it's just not an original story, really, and I feel like he just stole there. And there's also just kind of like dumb Todd Phillip jokes. Like, why is it Zorro the Gayblade? Why isn't it just Zorro? Because it's been said many times, right, that the Wayne parents are watching Zorro.
I did notice that. Is that a thing? The time period? Zorro the Gayblade would have been, I guess, the time period in the 80s that it
came
out?
Yeah, but it's also, they could be watching any of the Zorro movies that have come out already. It's like the small Todd Phillips thing in there. And this is something that McQueenie and Andrako and I talked about.
Yeah.
And it's something that they harped on a lot more than me. But there's just moments where you're just like, all right, Todd, we get it. You're doing your thing.
Yeah.
I still think you did a good job, but I don't think you should get nominated. My thesis is a lot more about the actual character of the movie, and I was thinking about it on the way over here, and about movies that have scared me in the past, and about, like, villains that have scared me, especially superhero villains. So what my thesis is that this is the first time I have seen a villain, a comic book villain, where I have actually been afraid of this person. I would not want to be caught in an alley with this person. Now, obviously, I wouldn't want to be caught in an alley with Bane, right?
Sure.
But the first thing you said was, what about Heath?
Right.
You know, what about Heath Ledger's Joker? I mean, he, you know, when he's like, look at me!
Yeah, that's scary.
It's scary. But it's, for me, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I knew this guy was going to do battle with Batman. He's a cartoon comic book character that has been brought to life by Heath Ledger. And yes, he's a scary person who I would not want to see in an alley, but he's also, I want to watch him.
Yeah.
I want to watch him forever. He's so cool. He's so fun. When you see Arthur Fleck in Zazie Beetz's apartment,
yeah.
When you see him on the show and you see him start to turn, you know, the moments that he has, the moment with the dwarf
in the apartment,
yeah,
yep.
And there's, I'm watching this and I'm just like, this guy's fucking terrifying. Like, he's actually a terrifying person. Whereas every other villain I've always watched, and there's been kind of like rose colored glasses on, because I'm like, you're a comic book villain. This is kind of awesome. Whereas this was just a dude that was pushed past his limits. And it's horrifying.
Yeah, because I think that's such an interesting point, because what you say about Ledger, you know, we're going to have a whole conversation on this show, and then as well this week on The Action Guys, we're going to do a definitive ranking of the 6 Joker portrayals that have happened in theatrically released films.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have that whole conversation on The Action Guys, all the different, that's a show we do over on Collider, so check that out later this week. But specifically talking about the fear factor, when you do meet Heath and you see him do all that stuff early on, you're kind of like, wow, what a formidable opponent for Batman,
right?
Like, oh, he's so much scarier than Scarecrow was in Begins. This is going to be crazy. How's Batman going to win? Because he is truly, seemingly his equal. He's pushing him to his limits. He wants him to kill. Like, there are so many things about, like, the semi flipping. That movie is designed to be an based in real life comic book story. Whereas this movie doesn't really want you to feel like you're watching a comic book movie. That's what Todd Phillips says. He wanted to make a super grounded in reality movie. And that's, I think, why you get Joaquin Phoenix doing such a freaky performance, because, like, I mean, he just nailed it. Like,
he did. He completely did. And like, when you start to see his sanity unravel, you know, between the story with his mom, between the love with his neighbor, like, the job, everything, bit by bit by bit by bit. And you start to look at it and you're like, man, what would I do?
Right.
What would happen to me in this situation?
Totally.
Where would my mind go? I mean, obviously, probably not shooting a bunch of people on a train is the first, like, the moment. But, like,
glad we cleared that up.
Yeah, glad that I got that out of the way. But also, what do? You find out your mother's been lying to you your whole life. You were basically abused so badly,
yeah,
that you just blocked it out. You lose your job. You have no money. No one likes you. No one thinks you're funny. You're bad at your dream. Like,
right.
Everything. Like, it. who knows?
Yeah, I think it's a really strong thesis. I mean, he is scary in a way that I think I can't remember another comic book villain really being scary. I mean, you'd have to go to like a villain probably in like a non-superhero comic book, like Jude Law and Road to Perdition is pretty scary.
Right.
But he's also not scary like this. He's like scary like he doesn't have any morals and he'll kill you, but like it's just different.
Yeah, I mean, this, because it's almost because I feel like every other time it's been a caricature of like what that thing should be, whereas this does just feel like this is the most extreme case of what could happen to someone like this.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it's really, really strong. So, guys, the next part of the show here we're going to do is one you guys all know and love. It's been around since the very beginning of the show, the dawn of the show, I think. I think this was in the very first episode.
I think so, maybe.
And this is Fist Pump Moment. Not to be confused with Fist Bump Moment, which some people think it's that. But Fist Pump Moment, which is, it's the thing that happens in the movie where you just sort of look around and you're like, this is awesome. This is so good. I get to watch the rest of this movie right now. I'm so hyped. And, you know, this is sort of a weird movie to try to have fist bumps in.
This is a weird one. Uh-huh.
Which is kind of why I think before I got hurt, we were talking about did we or did we not want to do Joker. We were considering doing Batman 89 this week instead.
Uh-huh.
Which is sort of bizarre. We still haven't done that movie, actually. It's probably pretty soon.
Definitely needs to happen.
Yeah, I love that movie. But
we were like, what are we going to fist pump about in this movie?
And the more...
like, what do we celebrate?
The more I think we've sat on it, the more you start to just realize how sort of visceral of a performance it was. It needs to be talked about. Even if it's not fist pumping, like, it's not awesome to watch him kill innocent people. But, like, there are things about this movie that feel awesome to watch.
Yeah.
And I think that's worth fist pumping. And so, you want to go first?
I just feel like no matter what I say, it's going to be kind of messed up. Because it's like, most everything that I... all the things that I celebrate about him, they're either in moments where you're just like, I can't actually fist pump the fact that you just imagine Zazie Beetz's whole relationship and now you're sitting in this apartment with a woman and her child. Like, that's horrifying.
I think it's reasonable for you to fist pump it, though, if it made you feel something. The point of fist pump is it makes you feel something.
Right, right. And I guess if we're going... I think if we're going traditional fist pump...
Yeah.
I'll say that one second. If I'm going like a real fist pump for Joker, it's when you figure out his mother is a psychopath.
Yeah.
It's the moment with him and Thomas Wayne in the bathroom.
That's mine.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's when and he punches him in the face. Because there are so many parts about that particular moment to me that like sum up what makes this movie great.
It's so uncomfortable and it's just like, oh wow, it's genetic now. It's, you know, even though you're adopted, it's like you've gotten this you and your mother are both psychopaths.
Yeah. He's unraveling. You realize they found a way to tie in the Batman like mythos in this like really, really interesting way. It's not a Batman movie, but like they have found a way to make Thomas Wayne a character. Yep. Thomas Wayne, basically, from what I can understand, he's basically Donald Trump.
That's right? What everyone's been saying.
You know, and so that's the character. And Phillips has been clear this is not a political movie, so like he has, by saying that, sort of invalidated that theory, but it still feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that particularly Joaquin is talking to him in that moment, some of the things he says, that's where I had that, like, that particular moment was where I had that, like, look around the theater, like, I really hope somebody doesn't walk in here with a gun. Like, this is the school shooter that's freaking me out moment that people have the problems with this character. And I think the reason, it's almost like, it's not a fist pump moment, it's like, it just makes you feel something really intense, which is, wow, you just pulled the wool on me, you've included Batman somehow, and this character is so frightening, like, you did a take on this that no one's ever done.
Yeah.
That was a crazy moment.
And I will say, I actually really loved what they did with Wayne's parents this time.
Yeah.
They
the end, you mean?
At the end, yeah. You know, kind of showing it as collateral damage in a riot.
Yeah.
Not having it have to be, I mean, you know, in 89, it is Joker that does it. And like, I don't really care about seeing it again.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it so many times. But the way they did it in this, I actually really liked.
Yeah.
I really did. I thought it was very kind of... it was very fitting. So my other fist pump, though, is just, if we're going like traditional action movie fist pump, I think it's when he shoots the dudes on the train, because you see that's the moment, right? That's the moment. It's almost the inciting incident, and I don't think it truly is.
Yeah.
The inciting incident is when he gets the gun, because you're just like, oh, here's the gateway.
Yep.
But when he actually shoots the dudes on the train, they're so shitty. They're so horrible to him. He's had such a horrible day already.
Yeah.
There's a part of you that's just like, good, fuck those guys. But then at the same time, you're like, Jesus.
Yeah, right. You're like, that's literally what you had to create to justify making this character a hero. That's the lens that we're looking at this movie through.
And I still don't ever think he's truly a hero, you know?
I totally agree. It's a really, really sort of morally confusing story to watch, which I think, again, is why people have problems with it. And I I do get the criticisms of the movie. It's not like they're lost on me. I totally this is like a conversation I think that you and I had about, it was when we were talking about Wedding Crashers and R-rated comedies, and it was like, so the first time you watch Wedding Crashers when you're in high school, you know, you're like, this is hilarious.
Right.
These guys are great. These guys are totally making me laugh. Like, and then you get older and you watch it again and you're like, they're lying about who they are to sleep with women at weddings and then ghosting the women. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, that's not funny or cool. That's
and like every woman in this movie is basically depicted as an idiot.
Yeah. Right.
Other than the two leads.
So you go like, okay, I still have the ability to laugh at some of these jokes, but I also understand completely why this movie can't really get made today.
Yeah. I watched it with my girlfriend, like, you know, like, yeah, 3 months ago. And she was just like, this is not a good movie.
But when you're 15, 16, 17, and you're watching it, you don't know that. You aren't smart enough yet. You haven't learned enough about the world yet to even detect that. I didn't think that at all when I was 15. Same thing. If I'm 15, 16 watching Joker, it's a completely different experience than being 31. Like, yeah, lived life. I actually understand shit. And that's, I think, why people have issues, is that you don't want to show the person who's basically getting bullied kill people and then sort of be celebrated in a riot.
And that's why I think this movie is really more of like a Rorschach test. I think you look at it, and what you take away from it is going to be drastically different than the person sitting next to you for the same reasons of everything as what you bring into the movie, right? And like your own personal demons, your own personal issues, and also your just own personal insights. So, again, we'll probably talk it maybe a little bit more in production development about like maybe the picking it apart or talking about the pluses and the minuses. But at the same time, it's like a lot of that is just made up for you to decide at home.
I think the last fist pump, if we wanted to add one more just because we have the same one, for me, would be when he blows off De Niro's head.
Yeah, so a couple people wrote that.
Because at that point, when that happens, it's been building to the moment.
And you can feel
it. And you know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
They did his character. They made De Niro's character just right. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just supportive enough, just smart enough, just not an asshole enough.
Yeah, but he is just an asshole quite, you know, just like, you know, by playing the clip and,
that you are just like, got it. Like, you think you're handling a sane person. You aren't. and like Joker, we think you've shown us you're going to blow your own head up. You're not going to. You're going to do the thing that comes from Dark Knight Returns. That's a specific panel from Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, he kills like a whole studio audience, doesn't he?
I think he gasses the audience and he blows off the head of the
dude.
Ryan, can you confirm that? Is that...
I will check that out right now.
I'm pretty sure that's correct because I saw something recently about that.
I think so. He gets out of jail and then that's what happens. But that's a whole different story because that's the one where Bruce Wayne is like 50 in that story.
And again, you have De Niro there doing the vain thing, right? He goes into Arthur Fleck's dressing room beforehand, and his producer is like, I don't know about this guy.
He's like,
you can call me Joker. And that's what a few other people's fist pump was there. But it's still the same thing of like, De Niro sees that there's this person that's probably not sane. He's wearing makeup in a clown costume to come on your show and like, he's asking you to call him by like a what, and then De Niro's just like, whatever, it's fine. It's going to be ratings. It's going to, you know, like, we're going to take advantage of this guy one more time to get more out of it for our show.
Richard Eric Jarvie, who is, you know, longtime senior staff of the Action Industries team, he has a comment here in the chat saying, when I walked out of the movie, I immediately wanted to be a better person, be kind to strangers. That was the initial effect this movie had on me. See, that's a really interesting point that you're making, because that's the other side of the argument, which is that his insanity and his bloodlust is driven by the fact that he's just basically shit on by the world. The world is really shitty to him. And that's sort of how you can justify this movie, right? That is the literal justification of this movie existing, is that, like, he becomes shittier as the world is shitty to him. And, you know, again, like, that this is why this movie is so polarizing. This is why weeks later we can still do a topical episode talking about it, because this is what people want to hear about. People want to hear about this movie. You know, like, I think about movies that people are going to talk about that are the best movie of the year this year, and a lot of those movies are not movies that, like, people are going to want to talk about 2 weeks later. They're going to come,
right,
and they're going to go.
But the chat is lit up.
Yeah,
today.
I mean, everyone
has an opinion. Everyone's talking about it. Ryan says, apparently in Dark Knight Returns, Joker stabs the other guest on the talk show and gasses the audience and lead host to death. That's what he does.
I thought he blew his head off. I guess
he did too.
Yeah, he smashes a coffee mug and stabs the co-host in the throat.
Wow.
Interesting. That's awesome.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've read that one. But in any case, that is going to wrap up Fist Pump Moment. So I suggest we get into the next part of the show, which is Star Profiles. Let's talk about we're doing three this time.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we covered our bases. So first off, you got Joaquin Phoenix. You and I have acknowledged this, and I think we'll be having a slightly more in-depth conversation about this in a couple weeks. But you know, he might be the most talented actor working today. It's possible.
Yeah, it's tough, right? I mean, he because one thing that if you guys do end up watching this movie again, which I know a lot of you probably won't, it's very hard to go watch again. Think of Commodus and think of Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
The whole time you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
And think of her.
Yeah.
Those three roles, and then watch this movie. And again, obviously you look at him, you're like, that's Joaquin Phoenix. Yep. That's what his face looks like. But everything else,
yep,
he truly disappears. He in one of maybe the best performances I've ever seen in my life, because even with Daniel Plainview,
yeah,
and Daniel Day-Lewis,
yeah,
he's awesome.
Amazing.
He's like the coolest, most badass oil man, yeah, that's ever lived.
And he's also just Bill the Butcher.
And he's exactly. He's also Bill the Butcher, whereas this is just something we've never really seen. And, yeah, and like the physicality, how skinny he got, the dancing. He actually is an incredible dancer to, yeah, be able to pull off some of the moves he does.
The, like, dancing stuff's really cool.
He just completely vanishes. Yep. It's unbelievable. And, yeah, and like the laugh, I love the laugh. I love the moment on the bus with the kid and the laugh and with the card. Me too. And like all that, it truly does feel like he just is about to explode at any moment.
Yeah.
You
So Cody Seal, Cody, what's up?
Big
what's
up, ups. Cody?
Glad to see you in the chat.
Salute.
Salute you. Cody says, most talented actor working today. That should have been Ben's thesis. So I believe we have to confirm the date, but there'll be an episode of The Action Guys coming out in the next month sometime that will have a discussion of who are the top five working actors today. Because, yep, you know, it's always an interesting conversation, right? It's sort of similar to the overrated, underrated, properly rated conversation we like to have. But it's more like Joaquin's never won an Oscar. So you try to compare him to, like, you know, Christian Bale or something like that. You know,
Lewis, Philip Seymour, like, yeah, all these great character actors.
You know, like other people that are working today, you compare him to, like, you know, DiCaprio, like guys that have the statue, guys that have been in the big movies, but they've been awarded. Like, you really focus on Joaquin because he's done so much varied work in so many different genres so well for such a long time, and he's still never won because he also has made the choice to be in really weird movies. I mean, that's like a thing that he wanted to do.
Joaquin.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, look, I mean, at his sisters. Last,
yeah,
his last three, like the Sisters Brothers, is like kind of a strange comedy western.
So weird. Did you watch it?
No, have you seen it?
I just watched it like a couple weeks ago, and I don't really remember a lot of it, but it was just weird.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
that's what it looked like. It had big actors, and it didn't really get any attention, so, mm-hmm, I assumed it probably was at least medium. Mary Magdalene, which I don't know, and then, mm-hmm, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, which is one that I missed from last year. That's Gus Van Sant. That's got Jonah Hill.
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to be decent. It's supposed to be a pretty decent movie. So that's kind of his last three. But you mentioned a lot of his most famous roles, and I think that Joaquin Phoenix, you know, he used to be the other guy in Gladiator. That's like, right? Yeah. And he was working before Gladiator. He had roles, mm-hmm, in the mid-90s, obviously. We need to watch Buffalo Soldiers. That's one of the,
yeah, yeah, one of the movies
that we was need to recommended watch. Uh-huh. To us. But I definitely think that for as long as he's been working, now over 20 years, getting acclaimed just sort of constantly for his work, it's crazy that he doesn't have an Oscar, and it does actually make me feel that's probably his strongest case for winning the award for this role. I don't know another role that I've seen this year that I would put on this level. Like, it's definitely not right now, and there'll be movies coming out in the next 3 months, but like,
I mean, I don't know in a long time if I've seen a role on this level.
Yeah.
It really is like incredibly transformative and unique, and like, you also watch it, and it's like, if you are a person that studies film, you're like, that guy did so much work for this.
Yeah.
So much work was put into this
so
character.
So skinny. I mean, that's when you first see,
like,
his
50
back.
Pounds.
It's crazy.
The dislocating thing with his shoulder looks, yeah, insane. Like, everything he does. So who knows what's going to happen with his career after this? I mean, obviously, it, yeah, feels like it has to go to the next level, even if that's possible. But it's still going to be by his discretion. He's,
yeah,
still going to only pick movies that he wants to do and part projects that he's interested in. So you'll still get these runs where it's like, okay, these three movies, I've heard of two of them, I've seen one of them, none of them were really that good, but then he goes and does The Joker.
Yep.
You know, and like, it was the same thing when Her came out. You know, you're like, oh yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is phenomenal. It's the same thing when The Master came out. You're like, that movie was weird, but they were great.
Right, right.
It's all of these things happening over and over. So
there's also the film that came out last year, You Were Never Really Here, which is directed by Lynn Ramsey. And that was a movie that a lot of people talked about. I didn't actually get to watch that one. I wanted to. That's on my list. It's like a pretty dark, pretty weird, I think it's like a hitman story or something, mm-hmm, like that.
It's incredible. It's a really phenomenal film.
People have talked a lot.
Which movie is this?
You Were Never Really Here.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard a lot about it. Uh-huh. I remember I wanted to watch it, and something came up last year. I didn't go to the screening. That, I mean, I know you go to a lot of the screenings with me,
mm-hmm,
but I feel like you still are protected in the sense that, like, you don't just rely on you will only see it if it's you go to the press screening. You just see the shit you want to see, and then sometimes we go together.
Right.
At this point, I've now gotten to the point that I have to force myself to see movies in theaters that I don't attend a press screening. I constantly find the shit that I don't watch is shit that I just didn't go to the screening, and then I realize a year later, like, oh yeah, I just never watched that.
Yeah.
And I just, because it's like, I so rarely go to the theater anymore just to go.
Yeah, I haven't gone. I mean, I'll maybe go once every few months now, maybe. Yeah. And it's usually just because we're going to cover something on the show that we didn't get a screener to or that I missed the screener for.
It's always airplanes for me. That's like, yeah. That's my catch-up tool now. So anyway, that's Joaquin Phoenix. Zazie Beetz, who most people, I think, became aware of Zazie Beetz in Deadpool. Yeah. Feels like that's,
I think that was the moment.
Deadpool 2. So she's in High Flying Bird, The Undiscovered Country, and Seaberg, all released in 2019. None of which I've seen.
I don't really know of any of them.
But I like her. I think she's got like a lot of she's got a lot of talent, a lot of heart. She's unique. She was just in another film that came out this year called Lucy in the Sky, which I did get to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a above average, not great movie, but she's a supporting role. So
I saw her in Geostorm.
Is she in Geostorm?
Yeah, she's in Geostorm.
Ah,
she
not in the part that I watched. I turned it off.
she's good. She's good. I like her. I think she'll be around for a minute, and hopefully she'll stay.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I have no complaints with Zazie, and I thought she did a really great job in this movie.
She's having her minute, which is the thing that we always talk about with actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of just tends to happen. Like, Hollywood usually puts you, they give you sort of your test, right? Like, you get seen in one thing that's really significant.
Yep.
All of Hollywood, the casting directors, they all say, like, oh, that person was great. Can we get them for this? And then you're in three movies next year. And they all come out, and everybody sees you three times and knows who you are. And that's the moment. Do you transition from there to the next thing? Or is the next year and the year after that a little slower for you?
Like, do they slow down?
You get a TV show, you stop really being in movies. Like, that's the other version, you know? And so we'll see in a couple of years if she gets that big starring role. You know, does she play the biopic thing? Does she get the other comic book role? Maybe Deadpool, she's in the third one. It's like, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, and I wish the best for her because I think she does a really good job, and I think she did a great job in this movie not trying to do too much. She knew exactly what she needed to do. She had her one big scene, and she killed it. Absolutely killed it.
I agree. Okay. Garth McMurray here. Big shout to Garth. What's up, dude?
What's up, Garth?
Zazie is brilliant in Atlanta, the Donald Glover TV series. That makes sense.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That show got so much traction. Everyone loves Atlanta, and I'm assuming she just crushes it on there. Lastly, we got De Niro. Everyone knows who Robert De Niro is. Most recently, he did The Comedian in 2016, Hands of Stone, and Dirty Grandpa, all in 2016. And AJ Lancaster made a joke in the chat, Salute General, about getting a call from Todd being like, hey, do you want to act in this movie? He's like, oh, well, I haven't acted in years. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree.
Yeah.
It's like one of the first times I've seen De Niro do something in a while where I'm like, oh, you're not just Robert De Niro. And like even in Silver Linings Playbook, where he get nominated for that?
Yeah.
Which I don't think he should have gotten nominated for at all. I thought he was fine.
I like him in that movie.
I think he's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's just playing a dad.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, like it's been a long time. Like if you go back and you actually watch King of Comedy.
Yeah. He's amazing.
And you watch Taxi Driver, you're like, that guy used to do it.
Oh, he
used to push himself. And I get it. You've been doing it for 40 years and everyone already respects. You don't need to try anymore.
Yeah.
But God damn it, when he does,
oh,
he's so good.
Old De Niro, like 73, I think is like, that's Mean Streets, I'm pretty sure. All the way through, I would argue like, probably all the way through like the mid 90s. It's like he really keeps going through. I think his last great, great role is probably Neil in Heat. And then he's really sweet in Ronin, which is 98.
Yeah, he's good in Ronin.
I would say like that's probably the end. Ronin is like the last really, really awesome De Niro movie. And this is the first thing that I had seen in a long time where I was like, oh yeah, like I'm stoked he made this. Like this is, he's a really good addition, and he does this better than I think a lot of other people would have done it.
Yeah, he does it really, really well. He really does. And I think there's like that air of just being a badass that you have to carry as that talk show host character.
Yeah.
And he nails it. So
and he carries it. So I also think, you know, we're seeing this, and then he is gonna come out obviously in the Irishman. In just a couple of weeks.
This helps me.
Yeah.
This lets me be like, okay, maybe De Niro's back in the mood. He's got Pesci, he's got Pacino, he's got Scorsese. Like that's a moment where you really go for it again. So hopefully he does. And hopefully it's good because I want to cover it on the show.
Wasn't there one more De Niro thing? I felt like there was a third bit that made me feel like he was kind of having a comeback. Am I just forgetting something? Guys in the chat, remind me if I'm...
I think there's one more. The parents, anybody?
Yeah. I mean, and that's true. Like he got older. A lot of these actors do that as they get older.
I love him in Meet the Parents.
And they transition into comedy. He's great. I mean, he is great in that, but not a badass.
So while you're reading the chat or figuring that out, I'm just going to read through this production development that our good friend Brandon the Hot Man Hannah pulled.
The Hot Man.
Between 2014 and 15, Joaquin Phoenix expressed interest in acting in a low-budget character study type film about comic book villain like like the DC Comics character Joker. Phoenix had previously declined to act in the MCU universe, which is amazing because he turned down Hulk and Doctor Strange in multiple films. He didn't want to have to do that. He might have done it once, like he may have done the origin of Hulk, like Norman.
Yeah.
I would have been into that. I would have loved to see him play Banner. I'm much happier with him as Joker.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, Joaquin's so talented that if he had taken Ruffalo or Norton's place in Hulk, or if he had just taken Cumberbatch's place and just been Doctor Strange,
yeah,
I would have been totally happy. I have total faith he would have pulled it off just as well as either of those guys.
We would have gotten a very different, obviously, both of them.
Yeah.
I think he would have been a better Hulk than Strange, but I'm very happy he's Joker. So Warner Bros. Pushed for Phillips to cast Leonardo DiCaprio as Joker. Thank God that didn't happen. Hoping to use his frequent collaborator Scorsese involvement to attract him. However, Phillips said that Phoenix was the only actor he considered, and that he and Silver wrote the script with Phoenix in mind. And I quote, "The goal was never to introduce Joaquin Phoenix in the comic book movie universe. The goal was to introduce comic book movies into the Joaquin Phoenix universe." And I love that quote.
It is really cool that Todd Phillips has the clout to just get this movie made.
Yeah.
Something that's really interesting is if you look at the producers as well, there's a name in there that's really, really interesting to see.
Bruce Berman. No.
It's Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper's on this movie as a producer. And I think that that's a fascinating thing because obviously they have a relationship from the Hangover series. But it's kind of that moment where Todd Phillips is like, I want to make this movie. I'm going to call my good buddy Bradley Cooper, who's super famous and super successful, and put his name on here as a producer. And that will help get this movie made because he's really successful and we're friends. That's how Hollywood works.
Yeah.
And now Bradley Cooper's fucking name is on Joker.
Yeah.
Like, he just gets to just be a part of this crazy, like, zeitgeist moment.
And that's one of the things where you look, and we talked about it on, I think, the Action Guy. I was talking about Brad Pitt specifically. And, like, he is a guy that is absolutely insane as a producer.
Yeah.
Like, Brad Pitt could never be in another movie again and just continue to have one of the best producing careers and probably win a handful more Oscars over the next 20 years.
He's got, what, three of the best picture winners? No, two of the best picture winners, I think, over the last 5 years, but he's had, like, a best picture nominee.
12 Years and...
12 Years a Slave, which he's also in.
Right.
Moonlight.
And Moonlight, right. And then he also produced Big Short, which was a frontrunner in 2015.
God, so goddamn good.
So good. And I feel like there might even be one more. But yeah, definitely kind of crazy. He has been very successful that way. And it's always interesting when you see those big movie stars pull that up, because it's a really smart thing to do.
Yeah, I think we skipped the rest of production development. As much as I'd love to talk about Todd Phillips and kind of his career, if you guys don't know, just go look him up. I mean, it's a very different movie, and a different movie for his career, and I love that he's directing Hemsworth in the Hulk Hogan biopic.
Yeah, I think all you really have to say about this guy is that Todd Phillips became very famous in the 2000s for, I believe, Road Trip, and then he did Old School, and then finally
Hangover.
He did The Hangover.
Yeah.
And those are all kind of iconic, not like 2000s comedies. He then did that movie War Dogs with Miles Teller and Jonah Hill a few years ago. It was kind of a pseudo, like, comedy drama.
Pretty sure I missed
that
a question on that. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then he did this. I mean, this is the next, like, big development for Todd Phillips' career. Feels very similar in a lot of ways to the Adam McKay route. Like, even so much so to the feeling that, like, I remember the trailer for War Dogs actually almost feels a little like Big Shorty. It has that kind of, right?
Yeah, it's like
satire.
Cool, fun, satire-y. Someone just wrote this in the chat. Looks like Norm. Is that right? That's how blind I am.
Norm 2014.
Norm 2014 says Jared Leto's tried to sabotage this movie. I read a big article about
that. I heard that rumor, yeah.
This is the biggest fuck you that Jared Leto could ever get after playing Joker a couple of years ago. Because also, how many times did you hear about Joaquin prepping for this role?
Zero. Yeah.
How many times did you hear about Jared Leto sending pig dicks to his co-stars?
Like every single week.
Yeah, like magazines filled with semen, and like, that isn't acting.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. And like, I love Jared Leto. I think he's incredibly talented. I thought he was so good in Blade Runner, and obviously Dallas Buyers Club, he steals the movie from McConaughey, who's incredible, but like this, that's a moment where you're just kind of like, really? I get it.
Yeah.
You want to make a movie, you've already won an Oscar, get over yourself. Like, get over yourself, dude.
Yeah.
Apparently he fired 4 agents for not getting the film, like...
Canceled?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, so when you say that's not acting, that's bullshit, I think what you mean, and clarify if I'm wrong here. He's an incredibly talented actor who has a process that has won him an Oscar and gotten him great, great performances.
100%.
So whatever he did, that is acting, because it's gotten him to the point that he's talented. It's just... It's antics that I don't know how necessary they are to get your performance that... Clearly somebody else who played the same role just didn't have to do.
Right. Or he did it by himself.
Yeah.
Just like Ledger did. Just like Jack did. But Leto trying to, like, make the Joker... I think he fed into what the Joker is too much. and it the performance was horrible.
Yeah,
and it wasn't his fault, but it was partially his fault. But anyway, we don't need to talk about that. What we do need to talk about is that we've only got about 10 minutes left. We've got a lot of things we need to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can talk just quickly about critical and box office because I do think it's interesting. You know, the budget of 55 on this movie is. Yeah, moderate. Domestically, it's brought in $247 million and another $490 foreign. This movie, Joker, an R-rated origin story with no Batman, has made $737.5 million. That's insane. That's one of the craziest things I could ever imagine happening.
It's unbelievable, and I think it honestly is a problem. I think that this is going to start a bad trend.
And that's an interesting point, and we talked about this earlier, but yeah. I think it's a worthwhile discussion to have. You know, which is the next film that DC Comics is going to come out with? Because this is the feather in DC's cap right now, right? Like, they tried...
100%. They finally... This and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, they really tried hard for 5 years now to make this whole thing work. And obviously, there's tons of conversations, DC versus Marvel. People, DC fans hate that Marvel's been so successful, and DC's maligned for a lot of their failures. You hear things like some people think Aquaman is brilliant. Aquaman is Aquaman. Wonder Woman is great. Huge fan of Wonder Woman. I think Man of Steel is underrated. And this movie, which is not part of their story. You don't get to weave this in. Suicide Squad.
This isn't your diamond in the rough. This is way off. This is untouchable. It happened and it stands alone.
So now it does lead you to believe, because there won't be a sequel to this movie, according to Todd Phillips. Which is the next one they're going to make? And which is the next one they should make? So I pose the question to you guys in the chat here as well, because Drew and I are going to have a conversation about this real quick. I do want to check with Ryan. Ryan, do we have a hard out, or can we go 5-10 minutes long today?
We can go 5-10 minutes long.
Yeah, okay, we can have the conversation. So, yeah, which is the next DC Comics villain that should be made into its own standalone film? Doesn't even necessarily have to be R-rated. It could just be what's the standalone movie that's going to work for them.
Do you want me to go first?
If you want to think for a second, I can go first.
I mean, I have mine, but yeah, go ahead.
So... my opinion is that I think the DC Comics villain that would be the most interesting to see would be Clayface.
It's so funny. I literally talked about Clayface on Collider Mailbag.
Really?
He was one of my favorite villains as a kid growing up. He also scared the shit out of me as a kid.
So there's a lot of really famous villains. Obviously, you know, you have Mr. Freeze and the Riddler, and you have Penguin, and you have Poison Ivy, and there's tons. There's literally tons. The reason I say Clayface is there was really this incredible origin story that they had on the Batman animated series in the early 90s, the Bruce Timm series with Kevin Conroy.
Kevin Conroy.
My favorite. It's this story where, like, this actor who has kind of a jacked up face, he's kind of involved with the mob, and he uses the stuff that's, like, undefined and, like, what it looks like is, like, a, you know, like a hair gel container, and he rubs it on his face, and it smooths his face out, and it chemically makes his face look all, like, movie starish.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes out there, and I think it's like he owes them money or something like that, but they end up either dumping him in a vat of this stuff or making him drink it or something like that. Whatever it is, it turns him into Clayface, who's this, like, big blob of clay, this big monstrous-looking thing.
Yep.
And I always really was struck by how cool of a story it was, because it was on a kid's show, but it felt like such a simple story that, like, really stuck with me as a kid. And then I remember years later in my 20s when I watched it again, I was like, wow, that was really well done.
And I think with now where we're at with CG and practical, you could make a sick Clayface.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want it to be all crazy and, like, wild-looking like Venom. I would really want it to be a lot more grounded. Just, like, I wouldn't want him to be insane, like, you know, Hydro Man or the Sandman. I don't want him just,
why not?
Yeah, like, this image right here, I don't want him, like, taking on cars. I want him to be, like, a human-sized or slightly larger thing that can kind of, like, change his shape and go through bars like he does in the coolest moments of the comics. I think it would be really fascinating, and I think because of the fact that non-human form, he's mostly going to be defined by his voice.
Mm-hmm.
I actually would love to see him as Andy Serkis. I would love to see Andy Serkis.
Oh, that's sweet.
I
love that.
You don't need to have, like, that story where he's a movie star, because I think Andy Serkis could be far more interesting character than just like a movie star. But I think if you base the story around Andy Serkis as this regular guy who gets involved with the wrong people, and when you put that stuff on, he becomes Clayface, I think that's such a cool idea. I think physically he could do such wonders. And maybe you get enough real-life Andy Serkis there, it's finally the moment that he gets recognized as the talented, insanely talented actor.
Incredibly
that
talented.
He actually is.
He needs to win an Oscar before he's done on his run.
He just doesn't get the credit for it.
Right, because you don't see him.
No.
But even he is amazing in the MCU.
Yeah, like, so I would adore seeing that movie. I think you could even do something really cool. What if Peter Jackson directed it? What if you had Peter Jackson direct?
Which Peter Jackson? Yeah. Lovely Bones?
Yeah, no, it's Peter Jackson who makes movies that are good. Yeah. He's still capable.
Yeah, he is.
Older, like, horror Peter Jackson, like Heavenly Creatures type of, like, weird, you know. Didn't he write The Frighteners? That's him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that era Peter Jackson, I think, would be a very cool thing to see. So that's my vote for the next villain.
So I'm just going to straight up steal our good friend Coy Jandro's post that he made on Twitter the other day, because I saw it, I read the whole thing, I thought it was brilliant, and then we had this conversation yesterday or today, and I was like, oh my God, this is it. So what he says, and it's a lot, it's like seven tweets, but essentially he's saying that it needs to be Mr. Freeze. It should be Mr. Freeze. He's already one of, if not the most sympathetic villains. Use the goodwill garner from Joker and make the first villain's love story. He wants to see, like, The Notebook, This Is Us style Nicholas Sparks love story between Nora and
Victor.
Between Nora and Victor, and then, you know, they're starting to get old, they're in love, and then boom, after Victor's gotten his fourth doctorate, Nora's struck down with the incurable disease, third act. From that time, we jump to Nora being in stasis for years and Victor overcome with guilt and frustration, having put his entire life into saving her, but can't do anything to bring her back. Young Victor is Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us, and his father in This Is Us is played by Ron Cephas Jones, who could be old man Mr. Freeze, old man Victor Freeze. And if you look and see Ron's face,
yeah,
it's perfect.
Yeah, he does have the look. He does have the look that's really, really set up for it. I think it's a cool idea, too.
I love it, man. And I love Mr. Freeze.
Me, too. Yeah. There's a comic book called Gotham Central that's written by Ed Brubaker, which is one of my favorites. And it's a story of the Gotham Police Department. And kind of the whole premise of the story is that, like, basically, like, the police department all kind of resent Batman for, like, doing their job. In the very first issue, one of the cops, like, busts into a room, and, like, Victor Freeze is, like, holding someone hostage, like a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the one guy's standing there, and Victor shoots his partner with the ice gun. And then I think he, maybe with a regular gun, the guy explodes. And he, like, and it's so, like, weird, frightening, sadistic, way more grounded than, like, any cartoon version of Victor Freeze we've ever gotten.
Right.
That it, like, totally reminded me. I remember the first time reading it, like, oh yeah, this guy's really scary. This guy is not Schwarzenegger. This guy is, like, a really interesting villain. And I think seeing some of that would be really, really cool. I think it's a great suggestion.
Yeah. Thanks, Coy. Thanks for helping me out today, man.
So do you think it's a good idea to go forward with these origin stories or not?
It's tough because, like, you say that and I say this and I'm like, I'd watch both those movies.
Right.
I'd watch them in a heartbeat.
Totally.
But the idea of being able to do this again, this has never been done ever like this. And it just feels very difficult to execute.
Yeah,
it really does.
It's just like, this worked for such specific reasons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to create that again. The problem with it is because you really want, this movie had such artistic integrity that, like, you know that most of the time you're not going to get that lucky. You know, most of the time the studio that's making it, the production company, the producers, they're going to have some say on who gets cast and what stays in the movie and the script. And you know, if you spend $150 million on the next one, because it needs to have lots of CGI, instead of making $800 million, it makes $450, it's probably still good enough for you to make another one, and then that one's going to lose money, and then it was this bad thing that we all remember.
And the, like, other thing about this that I think really matters is it's grounded in our world.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, even with Clayface and Mr. Freeze, you have to still put in superpowers, essentially.
That is true. Like, Two-Face is probably the one. You could get away with Two-Face.
That's what Andrew Fudge was just saying. My money's on a Two-Face movie, and I'd be into that. I always love Two-Face's origin in Batman. I mean, it's been done so many times now.
Just recast Tommy Lee Jones and tell him to just play it straight.
So good.
Anyway.
8.9 on IMDb, and on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a 68% by critics, which I find pretty fascinating and honestly somewhat appalling, because even if you don't like the subject matter or, like, maybe what you think the message is,
giving this movie a negative review seems insane.
It's a phenomenally made film.
Yeah.
It really, truly is. Like, you can't pick apart. I mean, I was actually kind of surprised when Drew was saying that he didn't think that that Joaquin did a good job. Really, he just thought it was fine.
McQueenie.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He thought it was just like he was the exact same crazy as he was when he started the movie as when he ended, which I don't agree with. I just had to look on IMDb. Yeah, it's the 13th movie now. I mean, that happens. It'll drop, but it'll probably stay in the top 50, I would think. I want to take a look at the Twitter post really quick. Do you want to do favorite line?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So we are getting a favorite line. It's a pretty, you know, straightforward segment. What is your favorite line in the film? You know, and I think there's a lot. I'm looking through the quotes here to be reminded kind of some of them, just because obviously it's been 3 weeks since I've seen it. But I really love when Murray, the De Niro character in the interview, says, "What's the punchline?" And Joaquin just responds by saying, "There is no punchline." I think it's such a sweet kind of like a sweet metaphor for what the movie is. Like, it's kind of all senseless and pointless anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same when he says, I used to think my life was a tragedy. Now I realize it's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of the crazy of Joker stuff. It should never really be wrapped up or tied up. And I think that's a little bit of the reason why this character worked so well for Todd Phillips. Like, one of the things that people have talked about for years, there's only a few comic book characters that have extremely ambiguous origin stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up until the comic book Origin was written, Wolverine had a pretty ambiguous origin story. Joker, people have referenced The Killing Joke, but it's not a clear origin. Like, he doesn't have a clear origin of who he actually is. That's right. Why all the different stories tell something different. And I think it's kind of the point is, like, you can make the story about Joker because you can tell your own story. People are not as attached to this one idea of what he is. And so I love that line about there being a punchline because I'm waiting for the punchline. There is no punchline.
Right.
Yeah.
There's none. The whole movie, really. I think I got to do I got to pull the cliche moment just because it's the quote that everyone's pulled from the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the one that everyone talks about and says the worst part about having a mental illness is people expect you to behave as if you don't.
Yeah.
And I just love that line because not only is it incredibly true in our society and like what people expect and all that, but, you know, just the moment that it happens in the movie and kind of just where it is in the movie, it just makes so much sense. I think it just really was a beautiful, beautiful little bit of poetry to throw in there.
I agree. A few in the chat here, people are sharing their favorite lines. Garth McMurray, favorite line, you don't listen, do you? Just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good one. Line. Yep.
You know, that's awesome. Paul DeNuzio, favorite line, I have a gun. I can come by tomorrow.
I have a gun. I can come by tomorrow. I'm trying to remember where that is. Can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember where that line is, but I do remember hearing it. So anyway, guys, we only have a few minutes left here, so we have to wrap things up. We're just going to really quickly share the AMA question, which is asked by Josh Ryan. Considering the media frenzy around the movie weeks before it was released and anyone who had even seen it, do critics, journalists have a responsibility overblowing controversy or helping to create controversy? I just think, like, anybody who's a radical, anybody who's like extremely, extremely like loud about a movie like this has to remember there are so many steps for this movie to actually get made.
Yeah.
There are so many people that have to approve a movie like this for years of production that, like, they have so much more responsibility to stop this movie from being what it is than we do to give it a good or a bad rating. It's a DC Comics character that's getting a grounded reality story. It's our job to talk about it if we like it or we don't like it. If it's getting released, any journalist who's like, this movie's offensive, you shouldn't go see it, boycott the movie, that's ridiculous. It's a piece of art.
Yeah, and I think honestly, that's like the double-edged blade of being that person that says, boycott this movie.
Yeah.
It makes everyone want to go see it.
100%.
Right? So I think it's kind of a tough question to answer, but I don't think you have a responsibility to create controversy or to overblow things, but I do think that you have a responsibility to give your opinion, and usually on a movie like this, a movie that's so divisive, it will create controversy no matter what.
Every time, yeah. I agree. So,
on our Twitter poll, which was nice, we put it up at the beginning of the show, we've got like 50 people that have voted, and it says 8% says makeup, 2% says the costume, 43% says physicality, 40% says physicality, did you just vote?
I'm doing it right now.
49% says the laugh.
Yeah, and it sounds like because we're running out of time, we will not get through the ranking of the makeups that we want. But luckily, that segment is going to exist on our other show, which is called The Action Guys. It's going to be going up on our YouTube channel, Action Industries, this Friday. The audio feed is available the same day we tape it.
Yeah, it'll be tonight around probably, I think, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can find that on the Collider mail or the Collider Factory feed on any of your podcast apps that you enjoy listening on, whether that's Apple Podcast or, I mean, I don't even Podcast One.
Yep.
So there are three action movie categories, Ben.
Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. We have done the show for 4.5 years, so I think it's pretty reasonable to not explain them. This movie's totally legit. It doesn't lose me at any point. It makes me feel pretty frightened. I think it's... Yeah. I don't think it even feels ridiculous when you get to the end. Like, when you get to the big riot and, like, him walking out and getting saved by these guys with a truck. Like, it could feel ridiculous, but it never loses me.
No, and I think just the fact that we have critics giving it a 68% just lets you know how realistic this movie is.
Yeah.
Because there's that many people that could give it a negative review because it made them feel things they didn't want to feel.
Yep.
You know, so I completely agree.
So there's only one last thing left to talk about on the show this week, and that's called The Pitch!
Wow.
Sweet. I was hoping you were going to laugh over the pitch. And it is it's Halloween week next week, so we've decided we're going to do one of the most iconic scary movies ever made. This is really exciting. We have Dr. Sleep coming out in just a couple weeks, so Drew and I have decided we are going to cover The Shining.
Yes.
It's the first Kubrick movie we've ever covered. It probably will be the only one we ever cover, but it's an amazing movie. It's extremely frightening, and I can't wait to talk about it on the show next week. So big shout out to our generals, starting with Brigadier General Brienne Chandler.
Ooh, we get a solo salute for
that. Solo salute, Brienne. And then everyone else who is a general: Andrew Hayes, Paul DeNuzio, Billy Belford, John Getz, John Patterson, Jake Iacovetta, Kyle Grandinetti, Kelsey Kirkland, Mac Ryan, Nick Gilmore, Jeremiah Morris, Kyle Hilbert, Tamor Buda, AJ Lancaster, Sauri Lamin Maki. Those are the generals in the army, guys. Thank you so much for your support, your patronage. We salute you, and we'll see you same time, same place next week.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.